It is because Baba always has been giving us the figure of his being the root of the huge tree that is manifesting in illusion. He being the root of everything, he being reality, he is the root. And all the manifestations that you have in creation is nothing but the outcome of his being the reality. So Baba always would want us to catch hold of the root, and you have the whole tree with the fruits and the blossoms and the flowers and the leaves and everything. So it's meaningless to go in for the leaves and for the fruits and for the branches and all that. Once you have the roots in your hand, you have the whole tree, you are the possessor of it.
Tree might come up, the leaf might come up in your hand, and the branch might break, yes. And might come down.
So, your next question is what Baba means by holding on to his Dhamma.
Yes.
First of all, let us understand what that word Dhamma means. Dhamma means it's the hem of his robe or a skirt.
A garment.
Or garment.
Yeah.
The hem of the garment. It's something, the end portion, you may call it, of a robe or a garment. So the figure that Baba gave when he said that we should hold on to his Dhamma and hold on, not with just one hand, but with both our hands. So he one day explained to us what he meant by it. The explanation that he gave us was so beautiful. He says, it all boiled down to the fact that he wants us to totally depend upon him. And how sweet and comforting it is to depend upon him. He gives us an example for that of a child who is being taken by his mother to a carnival or the world fair, you may call it. The child is being taken out there in that crowd. There are so many sights there. It's frightening to the child, at the same time, it makes the child happy too. Frightening in the sense because for the first time the child is being taken out in a crowd, milling crowd. And the reflex of the child, without the mother wanting him to do anything, he just holds on to the dung or to the skirt or to the hem of the skirt of his mother. Just that act of his makes him feel so comforted, secure. And he depends upon the mother totally. Because he knows as long as he holds onto the skirt of his mother, he's safe and secure. Mother then winds her way through one section of the carnival or the fair or another. And many giant wheels are there and many other distractions are there. And there are people who make speeches and there are stalls and a lot of tantalizing ice cream is there and many things are there. The child is able to enjoy all the sight, all the sound, everything that is there while feeling completely secure because he has the grip of the mother's skirt there. Likewise, Baba says, this whole world is nothing but a big carnival. And there is the milling crowd around. There are many distractions on the path. And, well, if you want to be in the world, you see, what will keep you safe and secure is your firm grip on me, on my name, on my keeping me as your companion, like holding on to my skirt or my robe. So that's why he always wanted us to hold on to his Dhamma, to completely depend upon him. That doesn't mean that you should not act on your own. Just as the child wandered through the fair and enjoyed everything and did ask people and did come in contact with so many thousands of people and everything was there.
But didn't get lost.
It was holding on to the mother, the skirt. Likewise.
I'm just on the tape. That's nice. Eric, she was telling you about the importance of bowing down at Baba's feet, laying your head on his feet. And as he put it, it's all that you can offer to him is your weaknesses. You put it at his feet. And you see, the act of bowing down at his feet is an act of surrender. And when you put your head down at his feet, it's you're surrendering so much of your impressions, your samskaras. And therefore, it is a twofold action gesture. You throw it into the ocean that he is. You're bowing down at his feet, offering, unburdening yourself of your impressions and samskaras, which get merged into the ocean that Baba is. So it is only to the God-man you can do that. We cannot, therefore, this bowing down can only be at the feet of one who is the ocean, because that is merged in it. It cannot be in lesser ones. That is where it is harmful. But the action when lovers would bow down, each one, even if it was a second, Baba would say, it's more than enough. It's really an unburdening of your impressions, and it's complete and beautiful acceptance of it. You see, when you have seen films of people bowing down for just a second, putting their head on Baba's feet, moving on. And Baba looks the ocean, even in the film, his acceptance, either with the hand like this, or this. This is a gesture of Baba meaning taking it in, accepting it. And often you'll find Baba doing this. Yes. This is love. This is love. But this is forgiveness, granting, that only he can do. So I just wanted to add that to what Eric was saying about the significance of bowing down at Baba's feet is surrenderance of your impressions, your weaknesses, your shortcomings. In the Hindu way, that is depicted by putting a coconut at the perfect master's feet. Coconut represents symbolically the mind, because man cannot give up his mind. It is easier to put a replica of it. And therefore, a coconut has become a traditional thing that you always find people also bringing, along with garlands, coconut, putting it by the feet. That's the traditional way of surrendering your mind. But Baba demands it much more literally, much more wholly than just a symbol or a gesture.
A pilgrimage to the tomb of the God-man, and the pilgrimage to the tomb of the perfect master is great. What I have gathered from Baba is that the pilgrimage from one place to another with the intention of having or gaining material benefit could be had even at the tomb of the perfect master. But if you aspire for a spiritual benefit, or if you aspire for something spiritual, you will be rewarded by making a pilgrimage to the tomb of the God-man. The tomb of the God-man serves as a repository of all the benefits, spiritual and material. Very rarely somebody goes to make a pilgrimage to the tomb of the God-man and asks for some spiritual benefit. It's very rare. But it is the place for asking for the things. There are people by thousands who go on a pilgrimage to the tomb of the God-man, and they always hanker and long for material benefits, for addressing their woes and miseries. Even that they get there. But then there are people who are associated with the perfect masters. And their association makes them aspire for something spiritual too. So suppose if a person who is associated with the perfect master approaches the tomb shrine of the perfect master with the intention of asking for something spiritual. So does he not benefit there at the tomb of the perfect master? Baba says, of course, he does benefit. But then what happens, that benefit is not drawn out directly from the tomb of the perfect master. It is always bestowed upon the person from the tomb of the God-man. It is relayed. Yes. The tomb of the God-man is the tomb of the form or the coat or the veil donned by God Himself descending from the realms of reality into illusion. That's the tomb of the God-man. Is the repository of the cloak, the veil that He put on, God Himself put on, while being in illusion. The tomb of the perfect master is the man, is the body of a man that realized God. As Baba has said so often, that when man realizes God, he is man-God. When God descends upon this earth in his advent, it's the God-man. So when man drops his body, he drops his body as man. And no sooner man realizes God, he has already dropped his body. Although he moves about for those who are associated with him in a human form, but he has already dropped his body when he realizes God. He continues to be in human form for some time because around his neck, so to say, is the responsibility, is the office that he has to conduct, which is very well explained in God Speaks by Baba. It is quite different in the case of the God-man. God assumes human form, descends in human form, a male human form, and when the time comes, he just drops the human form, the man form. It is also the man form. But it is not the man's body, you see. It is quite different. It's the cloak, it's the veil, that veiled reality when reality descended into illusion. So that is something very dynamic, something very spatial. And therefore, the tomb of the God-man is so very important as a place of world pilgrimage. There are the tomb shrines of the saints and the perfect masters and the valis and the pious people. They are all there. They are very good. Where persons can derive material benefit from there. But these material benefits are also relayed. They can derive spiritual benefits also, but they are all relayed from the powerhouse, so to say, which is the tomb of the God man.
So how fortunate that all Baba's lovers come direct, because they're not coming to ask him for anything or for material benefit or any benefit. They're just coming to offer their love, and they receive the spiritual benefit because that's, he's the giver. He's the giver of that. Like one Baba lover, I was very delighted when somebody new had come and they said, "But well, what's the difference? What's the difference? There's so many who call themselves avatar. I'm avatar, this one is avatar, that one is avatar. How are we to know? Isn't it confusing?" And the Baba lover said, "Not at all. You'll find others say, 'Come to me, I'll give you this, I'll give you that.' Baba says, 'Come to me, I'll take away this, I'll take away that.'" Mm-hmm. Because it's really the taking away. That's the grace, that's the gift. Mm-hmm.
Going to Baba, you see, whether he be in physical form or not, or to his tomb, it's like having a tired person after the day's toil and toiling, going to a fresh spring to refresh himself. When he goes there, just for the sake of visiting Baba, Baba's place, whether his physical form or the tomb, it's like having a dip in the ocean and feeling refreshed and fresh.
Even the places where he has been.
Yes.
I mean, even in Marazab, where he lived, really lived for most number of years here. And his presence is, he also shows us that his presence is not limited to the physical, else you all wouldn't be here. But this is a continual, a perennial, a continuity, whereas it may not be so in the perfect master's case, but because he's God-man, the flow just continues on for 100 years, and that same force it flows, then it begins to, according to his own plan, to diminish little till the 700 years, when it is dry again and the fresh spring and the fresh dispensation is again so much in need, and out of his love for his own creation he appears again, walks among us again.
Is there a difference between what you said about when Baba said he would be here for 14 years after he dropped his body and then 100 years.
Well, if he is to come again as man, if the next advent is in 700 years, then the full force of his presence, his being, continues for 100 years after he drops his body. If he's coming after 1400 years, then it continues for 200 years.
And then how about the 14-year period after he drops his body?
How about the?
The 14-year period. You know, Baba had said, I will be here for 14 more years.
That we have to see. Baba was sitting right in this chair when he said, just keep watching. Like saying, be still and just keep witnessing all that is to be. And this we realize now, even this which we witness now is just a beginning.
Mani, I was wondering, when you're talking about Baba's presence and going to places where Baba was, his physical presence was, I was wondering, I understand what Eric said about the tomb and being veiled there, but does it make any difference really whether Baba was somewhere longer in the body than a moment?
Yes. It is bound to be. Yeah. Just like when you're sitting in the sun, where and the sun is on you, you absorb the sun rays. You not only absorb the benefits, but you reflect it. You have received. And that is important. Anything touched by Baba, therefore, has that same his presence. It is a difference. But what is there that Baba hasn't touched? Like when Baba put his feet in the ocean when he was at Myrtle Beach. Well, just imagine, no water that you can have there. You cannot say, this is the water that Baba washed his feet in. You know, because when Baba used to have his feet washed, lovers, it would mean much to them to take a bit of it in a bottle or a container. And but there, he is so boundless in his giving. He's such a bountiful giver and forgiver that he dips his feet in the ocean and here, have it all. All this water that's washed my feet. You cannot limit him. That's true, but just like he did not reveal himself, he took great pains not to reveal himself to everyone. He could have done that. As he said, it was easier to manifest, to release, to reveal, than to hold him, than to contain. In the same way, while he was in his physical presence, it was not for all. Even now, as you see, he has gone out of his way, gone to each of you, and touched your heart. He has brought you here. Otherwise, you would not be here. In the same way, you see, where there is that difference, like there is the difference between you who love Baba and others who are equally seemingly worthy or otherwise who don't love Baba. There is that difference, isn't there? In the same way, the places where he blessed everything he touches, he breathes upon, he gives us, he is in, is blessed, immeasurably blessed. And therefore, relatively to us, those places, I've heard from Baba and others who've been here in Marizal, and sometimes it's people who can see, they've had a vision, not necessarily people who are prone to be psychic or have visions, who have been surprised, but I've seen Baba once, or Baba just outside Eric's cabin, one saw Baba seated in this chair. One saw Baba sitting on his bed in the room. But we haven't. But what I mean to say, this is not by way of saying that is important. This is by way of saying that is assurance to us that he is He is with his lovers, very much so with his lovers, wherever his lovers are, wherever they are. In fact, sometimes you ask the question, why is it necessary to be here, to be with Baba? Our question is, why are you here? I mean, that is a continual witnessing of his drawing you all here, of his love that has brought you here. We witness that, and therefore, whatever you feel you may receive by being here, rest assured, we receive as much from you. It's a continual exchange.
Excuse me, Mari. Could you repeat what you said about Baba's presence in this term for the next 100 years?
His body, his man form, the veil that was there, was the longest in his association. Right from the moment that he was born in human form, you see, till the day he dropped the body. The longest association that anything on this earth had in this element was his body. So, to approach his body will be the most beneficial.
Yes,
that body rests in the tomb, and therefore to approach the tomb of the God-man is most beneficial. Mm-hmm. And therefore to make a pilgrimage to the tomb is something of a great blessing.
Right, I understand. The question I'm not sure of the answer yet is that if you know for a fact that Baba touched a certain place, and you can't come to the tomb for some reason, you're in this place, and you want to surrender to this place, you feel you need to, and Baba only stepped there, or does it make any difference, really? It's hard to understand whether, I know with his body what you're saying, but whether it was the chair they sat on every day in Mandalay Hall, or whether it was just where in Myrtle Beach he was in the lagoon cabin for 2 months. You know what I mean? Does that make any difference?
Nothing makes any difference whatsoever.
Your love makes
everything. Your love makes everything. This reminds me of a very good story. And the story is that, you know, it is said, there is an injunction given by the Prophet Muhammad, that means Baba in his past advent, that once in your lifetime, at least once in your lifetime, you should make a Hajj, means a visit to the place of pilgrimage, that's known as Kaaba, that ancient stone where Abraham had to sacrifice his son. You know that?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That place is known as Kaaba. So people have to serve once in their life, at least once in one lifetime, one has to go there. That's what Muhammad had told his followers. Here, a person sets out on a pilgrimage, and he is all bent upon following the instructions given by the Lord, after the Lord had dropped the body. So this man sets out, you see, on a pilgrimage. There are no planes. Now there are planes, and now there are trucks and cars, and every sort of conveyance is there, you see. But those were the days when they had to go on foot, on camel back, you see. So this man, knowing fully well that he has to go there, he goes there. And with great difficulty, he had saved enough money to go there. He was an ordinary laborer, and he could do nothing except toil day and night to collect money to go to the place of pilgrimage. En route, what happened was that there was another set of people, you see, a crowd of people, who were also going on pilgrimage. And the head of the group, you see, was considered to be a very pious person, and he had a following, and men and women and children were going, following him to that same place of pilgrimage. In the meantime, it so happened that on that particular day, they have to reach the place to circumambulate Kaaba, you see, that stone. There is a particular day fixed. So these people who were heading towards the place of pilgrimage, they had no time to waste. But in their group, it so happened that a woman was pregnant and she delivered a child. And nobody cared to be there to look after her. And they left her there in the desert like that. And they went because it was the injunction of the Lord that they must be present there at that site, you see, on a particular day to circumambulate once in their lifetime. So this pious man who had headed this group, you see, says, no, he was bound by the traditions, you see, and he says, no, you must come there, leave that. God will take care of this woman, because we are all heading towards Him. It's His duty. And God did take care of her, of that lady with the child. Through whom? Through this man who had toiled day and night and with greatest difficulty had saved enough money to reach Kaaba, you see. He was on his way also.
No.
That other one I said, that he was on his way. He comes across this lady, all in agony and not knowing. So, he then goes, he begs of these people to help, you see. Nobody is caring because they're all heading towards that place. They have to be there on a particular day. So with all the money that he had left on, he buys certain things for her, he looks after the child and looks after the woman and all that. And he misses the day. He couldn't go. He couldn't go. He misses the pilgrimage. And on their way back, you see, it so happens that this woman is taken care of by this man with the child there. The group comes back after the pilgrimage, headed by that pious man, and they camp there, where the woman was there, with that man. And man is so relieved that some people are taking care of this woman now. The husband has come and the other group and all that. So now he bids them goodbye and he leaves the place. And he now, he says that, well, at least he could go there and pay his respect there to the tomb, to the place of pilgrimage. So he leaves, and the group is there. So in the night, the whole group was sleeping there, and there is a dream. To the pious man gets a dream there. In his dream, he sees and hears the voice. He says, of all the thousands of people who have gone on the pilgrimage this time, only the pilgrimage of one is accepted by the Lord. So this pious man says, my Lord, whose pilgrimage have you accepted? Who is that blessed one whose pilgrimage you have accepted? This is the one who looked after this child and the mother. So it is not necessary that you should go there physically. You have to just long to go there, to be in his presence, to keep him company. That is the most important thing. You see, your physical visitation, the birds come and sit there on his tomb. Yeah, the crows come there. That is also benefited, no doubt. But what is most important is how you feel within. Whether you are drawn towards the place of pilgrimage. You have to hanker for it, long for it. Whether you are across and far away from the pilgrim place, you see, or Baba's tomb, it matters very little. You have to long for it. Baba being love personified. He is truth personified. He is everything. There is no doubt about it. There is no difference between the truth and love. But then there is a difference between one who loves the God-man and one who aspires for the truth. His aspirations may lead him through all sorts of alleys and channels and passes and heights of the mountains and the valleys and all that in his search for the truth. Whereas the one who loves the God-man, that is, loves the personification of truth, for him there is no wandering left. He just adheres to him. He just holds on to him. His one-pointed attention is all on his beloved because he's in love with him. So, I'm reminded of a story. There was a lover who was completely satisfied and he just loved his beloved Lord and had nothing to do with any sort of aspirations. He had no questions to ask and nothing to seek or find. He was quite content in loving the beloved. And then there was another person who was seeking, and in his search he observed all sorts of austerities. He went on fasts. He meditated. He concentrated. He did all sorts of yoga exercises. And then in the course of his aspiring for truth, he was told that he will get a lot of powers. He can demonstrate powers. He can at will raise the dead. He can at will kill somebody. He can cure the sick. He can benefit the blind by giving them sight and all that. So he was charmed by this, that if on my path that leads me to the truth, if I were to gain all these things, I would be helping somebody else. So, in right earnest, he started to gain power. In right earnest, he tried to invoke the blessings of the Lord, so to say, so that he may get power, so that he can be of use to others. Years passed by. He continued with his meditation, concentration, yoga practices, and all types of searches after truth, the different types of yoga and all that. The different paths he tried. All the time, it so happened that he remained at this place there and seated on the stone because he was trying to feel that, well, all that he had to do was to renounce completely and just remain at one place, and maybe one day God will be pleased with him. And it so happened that after years of this, one day God was very happy. He was pleased with his practices. So he was seated on the stone there for years together, and a day comes, a day of great joy to him, when he hears God asking him as to what he wanted. So he said to the Lord, says, "Lord, you are the doer of justice. And it's foolishness on my part to ask you for anything else. Just do justice to me." And the reply that he received from the Lord is that if I were to dispense justice, justice demands that all these years you have been a burden on the stone by sitting over here and invoking my blessings to gain power. Justice demands that now you unburden the stone of your burden and put it on your head and allow it to be a burden on your head. And that's the end of the story. Mm-hmm. From it you can guess whatever you want to. Mm-hmm. Did you follow the meaning behind it?
Yeah. I really love.
Yeah. So we are coming to that story.
Yeah, good.
Because I don't like to leave it as it is. That's why I said that the sequel to that is this story. And divine justice for him. There was a certain Musk, you see, who was God-absorbed. And he was lost to the world, so to say. Nobody took any notice of him, so to say. And he was all the time absorbed in his love for God and wandering from one street to another, from one village to another, one town to another. One day this Musk was passing by, and there was a certain yogi who was seated there, you see, on a seat. And he spotted the Musk going by in front of him. His attention was drawn to this God-absorbed personality, the Musk, as Baba calls it. And he just stopped him and says, "Hey, ho, wait, where are you going?" He asks the Musk. So the Musk, in his usual way, says, "Well, I'm going to God. Because we are all the time in communion with God. He says, "You are going to God?" He says, "Yes, I am going to God." "Well, will you carry a message from me?" He says, "What message? What is the message that you want to give?" He says, "Tell my beloved Lord that I have been living a life for 40 years, all in solitude, waiting for his command and his grace for the release, for my emancipation. 40 long years I have passed in solitude, meditation, concentration and all sorts of austerity. And there is no sign from him, no sign of his recognition about it. Will you convey this message to my Lord? So the master said, of course, I will. Well, he passed by, and the yogi again got himself engrossed in his meditation and concentration and all sorts of austerities. One village, another village, another town, another city, and all that. He came to another city, and he was passing by a house of a certain person who was loving God, who lived his life in the most natural way. He had his family, wife and children. He had his work to do for his livelihood, and he loved God in his own simple way. He recognized this man of God, the master, and he says, "Hey, where are you going?" He just casually told him that. Oh, he says, "I'm going to God. I'm going to visit him." "Is that so? Is it true?" He says, "Yes." So this man, who loved God, said, "Will you please carry a message to me and ask him, how many more years, how many more incarnations are there for me to get emancipated and to be one with you, my Lord?" So, right, "I will convey this message to you." And years passed by, and there was no trace and no sign of this man of God. Well, it so happened that after many years, this man of God again passes by, and the yogi spots him again. By this time, the yogi is so old. And far advanced in age and weak. So he recognizes the man of God and says, "Did you convey my message to my Lord? So many years have passed by and there is no answer from him yet." He says, "Yes, I did convey your message to the Lord." And what was his reply? Well, his reply is that despite all your efforts and your austerity and your one-pointed devotion and attention on me through meditation and concentration, there are 40 more lives for you to realize me. The yogi said, he lost his heart. He says, 40 more lifetimes. I thought that it was in this very lifetime I would be emancipated. 40 more lifetimes. He says, "Yes, that's the reply." He was very sad at heart and did nothing. He continued with his practice. Well, after another couple of months or a year passed by, and the man of God passes through that same city where the lover of God had asked him to convey the message. And through divine providence, it so happens, this man spots him, the lover of God spots him again. He says, "Hey, did you come back from God?" He says, "Yes. You had asked me to carry a message for you." "Yes, I have carried it." "So what's the reply? Tell me." "Well, God has replied," he says. "Well, he's pleased with your love," he says. "And there are 400 more lifetimes for you. 400 times you'll have to reincarnate to become one with him." Did he say that? Did he recognize me? Did he even give cognizance to my being here and loving him? Oh, how wonderful it is that my Lord condescended to recognize this little fact that I loved him.
And what is 400?
And says, "What is this 400 lives for that? It's nothing in comparison to it. That he has given his little attention to." And the instant he experienced this, the next experience of it was God realization. This is what counts most, you see, is how close and one you are with your Lord and your love for him.
Look.
Whereas that man got so confused with 40 more lifetimes, and here God has just recognized his love, and that's enough for a man. He gets lost in it, in the very thought of it, that the Lord condescended to recognize this. Giving cognizance to my petty love for him, enough to drown him in that.
To somebody that doesn't know about the advent of Baba, to tell them about Baba's advent, that the avatar has come, and they don't act upon it, and they just say, well, it's just another person in Indy. Yeah, just a bunch of baloney.
Well, to that we have got Baba's own assurances. He has told us that it's your bounden duty to share this great news with the world about his advent. Time and again, whenever he comes on this earth, he wants the world to know about it. And those few who are close to him and recognize him and have the conviction of the advent, to them he gives this responsibility to go out and share this information with the rest of the world. And there came a certain person to Baba in this advent and said the same question that you put today. And he said, the reply that Baba gave was that it is immaterial whether the person accepts it or not. It's enough for the person's ears to hear the news of the advent. Whether he knows it or not, he's much benefited by it. So it is not our, responsibility to see that the word of information that we give about his advent penetrates his heart, as long as we discharge our responsibility by bringing it to his ears. Our duty is over.
A link that will serve at some time in some advent, because Baba would lay great stress on connection with him, even if it's an indirect connection, as only hearing his name, the connection is there, the link is forged, and which will serve in future time. It's very important, but that's only since Baba released his name, released the grace of his name, because for a long period Baba kept his name in seclusion, as it were. When we were traveling with Baba in the blue bus, for instance, or when the men Mandali were traveling with Baba in trains on mass tours and things like that, and Baba would never let us divulge his identity, who he is. Not only that, we couldn't even call out to Baba by saying Baba. Only just Baba, although it could mean any Baba, but it might give a clue to who Baba is. So when we got down at little hotels or little places, resting places for the night on our blue bus journey, when we stopped, we couldn't talk to Baba if the hotel staff was there, or if we went into the dining room, for instance. So I still remember Narina would call Baba Babuli, and Nadine Tolstoy, she would call Baba Babushka, so as not to let it slip. So then the time came when Baba opened the gates to release the grace of his name, when he told everybody, give out my name, spread it, just give it, the gift of his name. So then when that is released from him, it is not we who are taking his name and giving it to anybody. Baba has released it. We are simply helping it reach whoever it is that we come in contact with. And it is always so that when you love somebody and they have not had the touch of Baba's love, you naturally want to share with them what you know is the most precious thing in life, what you have received. So it doesn't matter. Just saying it is a great blessing.
Another, his precious name, for humanity's sake. there were instances when people around him who had heard of it and were ready to share his name with others, they were themselves not confident whether they were convinced of his being the God-man. And to them he said, "Be not hypocrites."